Welcome to a special edition of Power Play. I'm Evan Solomon. We have extensive coverage tonight of the suspected hate crime, a premeditated attack. Police say a family of four who were killed in London, Ontario, were targeted because they were Muslim. A pickup truck jumped the curb on Sunday night, murdering four members of the same family, one just a teen. All were killed, and a fifth, just 9 years old, seriously injured. A 20-year-old man from London named Nathaniel Veltman is now charged with four counts of first-degree murder, one count of attempted murder, and remains in custody. Police say Veltman was motivated by hate and struck the family because they are Muslim.
All of the victims in this matter are members of the same family. The deceased include a 74-year-old female, a 46-year-old male, a 44-year-old female, and a 15-year-old female. One 9-year-old male, the sole survivor, remains in hospital with serious injuries not considered life-threatening. I'm also able to tell you at this time that based on information collected during the course of the investigation, we believe that this was an intentional act and that the victims of this horrific incident were targeted. We believe the victims were targeted because of their Islamic faith.
Intentional, targeted because their Islamic faith. So how is the community reacting? What was the motive? Do we know much more than that? We're going to begin our coverage in London at the scene where the horrific events took place on Sunday night. Joining me now, Nick Paparella from CTV London. Nick, you are there where this horrific crime happened. Can you give us a description of just exactly what happened that Sunday night and where you are and the scene there?
Well, Evan, it was a typical Sunday night in West London. I mean, this family of five, a mother, a father, their two kids, and the mother-in-law were out walking along Hyde Park here. So this is the West End of London, some newly developed homes around here. But really, a lot of people, if you walk around here on a Sunday night, Saturday night, on a nice evening, you see dozens and dozens of people walking up and down here. And then out of nowhere, this happens. This pickup truck leaves the road, hits them, leaving four dead, the mother, the father, the mother-in-law, and the 15-year-old daughter, and then a 9-year-old boy in hospital with serious but non-life-threatening injuries. I mean, just a horrific crime. And then you find out this afternoon that it was intentional. And they have a 20-year-old who was in the pickup truck charged with four counts of first-degree murder and one count of attempted murder, and his name is 20-year-old Nathaniel Veltman. He's in custody, will remain in custody. So just, I mean, a horrific story that just keeps getting worse. And this, you feel for this 9-year-old boy, Evan, who, when he recovers in hospital, this is what his life is going to be.
Yeah, people are going to ask about the motive, and I'm going to get there. Let's just focus on this family. Do we know about this family? How long they've been in London, and the reaction from the community. Nick, you and I were chatting. People are literally approaching the scene where you are. What do we know about this family, and how has the community reacted to all this?
So, Evan, just to let you know, they just opened up Hyde Park Road here. It was closed off to traffic until about 3 o'clock. And since then, there's been a steady stream of well-wishers coming out here. A lot of neighbors, a lot of friends, many people in tears. I had one guy come up to me. He's a doctor, okay? He's applying for his Canadian citizenship, and he told me to give you this message. He said, tell them, he's from Pakistan as well, as that's where this family is from, and he said, you tell your viewers that I'm not applying for my Canadian citizenship any longer, that he's heading back to Pakistan. And so, basically, that's the feeling around here right now, and still a steady stream of people coming out to check out the scene, and it's just totally unbelievable that you'd think this would happen anywhere in Canada, let alone here in London, Ontario.
Nick, before I let you go, I know the police had a press conference today. We don't know the motive. We don't know if this was a lone wolf, because the Muslim community in London and around the country are going to feel, rightly so, incredibly vulnerable. Are there more attacks? Was it a coordinated attack? Any information on those things?
Not really. We don't really know if there's any connection with anyone else. We do know, Evan, that this suspect, basically, he hits them here, jumps off the road, goes up onto the sidewalk, collides with the family, runs them over, basically, and then he takes off. And he's not found for about another 7 kilometers in a shopping mall parking lot, Cherry Hill Mall, which is about 7K away from here. So that's what police are concentrating right now. They don't believe there's any other suspects. Right. They believe right now that this guy acted alone. And again, he's facing 4 counts of first-degree murder and 1 count of attempted murder.
Horrific situation. The echoes of this obviously being felt across the country. Nick Pepperella in London, Ontario. Thank you, sir.
You take care, Evan.
Okay, RCMP are investigating whether this will meet the threshold of a terrorist charge, so that's something to look for. Police have also said that the suspect in this case was wearing some kind of body armor. So again, new details of that are emerging. Clearly, community leaders in London and across the country are reeling, feeling vulnerable. The London police continuing their investigation, but will there be increased security measures for the Muslim community in London? Let's find out. Joining me now is the mayor of London, Ontario, Ed Holder, who I've known for a long time when he was an MP here in Ottawa. Mayor, first of all, Asada Day, as you can imagine, is tragic and as senseless and as hate-filled an idea, an event as you can imagine. Give us a sense of how your reaction in the community to this tragedy.
Well, as information began to unfold, Evan, it became clear this wasn't an accident. When we heard last night, the accident occurred on Sunday night about 8:40 and in the West End of London. And so it went from an accident to what was clear was an intentional act. And then as more information became available, it was very clear even today when the police laid first-degree murder charges against this individual that this is mass murder. And it's probably in all the time that I have been mayor, this is the most significant, impactful day that I think I've ever had. But it's not about me. This is about the family. This wiped out 3 generations of family in one situation. It's horrific, senseless, and the words don't do it any justice. This makes no sense at any level, and so when we talk about being horrific, it's for too many the most horrific time ever.
Mayor, do we know any idea of the motive here? Why? Any history? Any prehistory of this kind of what appears to be Islamophobia, or is it just random?
Well, at this stage, look, it's early times. This is not even a day since this has occurred, and the police, it's extremely important to them that they do this carefully and do it right. In terms of what came out of the press conference earlier today, there was no indication that there was prior issues, but again, early times. I know that as the police process their search warrants to determine various connections, I'm sure social media and connections that this individual has, that they'll be able to give a better sense of who this person is. But at first blush, there, based on what the police have said, there doesn't seem to be an indication of prior motive. And that makes it all the more bewildering and all the more tragic. But clearly, because these people were dressed in their in Arabic clothing, they were absolutely targeted by this individual.
So that's right. So they were wearing clothing that is consistent with obviously the Muslim religion, Islamic religion, and they were identifiable as such, and that's why they were targeted. There's no idea that there was a relationship here. This was a random target. For the Muslim community in London and across this country, But for your community in particular, are the police and is your government ensuring that this is this guy might be a lone wolf, but they must be feeling very vulnerable right now to other attacks?
Well, it's interesting. The deputy mayor, Josh Morgan, and I met with the Muslim community later on Monday morning. And the police were there just to provide some background to the extent they're able to share information, Evan. And what I said in my comments, that London is a safe community, and that all Londoners, Muslims, any ethnic minorities, should be able to feel safe in our city, as I do. But I do know that the concern that was expressed by the community was, can you give us assurances? Can you please tell Muslims that they are safe in our city? And that was part of my messaging today at a press conference held with the police, representatives of our Muslim community and myself.
Will there be increased police presence? I know there's a London mosque, there's other Islamic centers. Will there be increased security?
I think certainly in the short term, and I think partly to deal with the issue that you have just brought up in terms of how safe people feel. I think right now it's safe to say that the Muslim community feels very vulnerable. But, you know, here's what's interesting is that the Muslim community, did you know that in London, Ontario, the first and greatest language spoken after English is Arabic. They are the largest ethnic group in our city, and significant and important. And what they do in terms of kindness during Ramadan and things of that sort is legend. I mean, these people are givers, and they show goodness that is profound. But I think now it's our turn to reach out to them and wrap our collective arms around them and say, we care, and it's our turn to now help look after you and with you. I think that's so, so important.
It's a tragic event, Mayor. As you say, there's a long investigation in terms of motive, what influenced this individual to take this shattering and murderous act, and we obviously are following along. I know you're grieving personally. I know your city's grieving and the country's grieving for this family. Thank you for taking the time on a very difficult day, Mayor. Appreciate it.
Thanks very much.
So that is the Mayor of London. We have lots more coverage here. I'm sure, like you, all of us are trying to figure out how to understand some kind of senseless tragedy like this. A family run down by a suspect who police say was motivated by Islamophobia. Police say it's the worst mass killing in the history of London, Ontario. Of course, it has brought up memories of January 29th, 2017, the murder of six people at a mosque in Quebec City. Five others, remember, badly injured there as well. And again, targeted because they were Muslim. Is Islamophobia, is violence against Muslim Canadians on the rise? Let's find out. I want to talk about that and the impact of that. Amira Al-Gwabi is from the Canadian Anti-Hate Network, and Amira joins us now. Thank you for taking the time, Amira. We're all stunned by what's happened and what the police have now said, that this was a targeted attack. And let's start there, because I think all of our reactions are important here. What was your reaction when you heard about this?
Thank you, Evan. Like everyone who heard this horrific news, it's shock, dismay. Sadly, you know, thinking back to what happened on January 29th in Quebec City with the killing of six men in a place of worship, imagining this particular family in London, Ontario, you know, out for a Sunday night stroll, you know, enjoying the evening, and to be targeted in this way, you know, a grandmother, a mother, a father, and a young daughter killed so senselessly, while the young boy was said to survive now, having lost his family. You know, my hands have been shaking for most of the day since I've heard this news, and it really just continues to boggle the mind as to how hatred, you know, in our society can lead to such utter devastation.
And yet, I think we'd be naive if we saw this as a singular event, Amira, and I want to talk about that. How does the community regard this in the context? And both you and I have mentioned what happened in Quebec City. That's not the only event, by the way, but it's maybe the one that springs to mind right away. Put this into some kind of context. Does the Muslim Canadian community feel that there is a rise of Islamophobia? And this is not, most people hope, and if you can say that, this is some isolated event. Is it in your mind?
Well, the sad reality, Evan, as you're pointing out, is no, it's not an isolated event. What is obviously, you know, causing all of us to take a pause is the fact that four people are now dead. But in terms of violence against Canadian Muslims, you know, incidents of vandalism, of harassment, unfortunately, there has been an ongoing, pattern of that type of activity in our country, just as we know that racism and discrimination against other groups as well has been on the rise right now, even in the middle of a pandemic. In fact, when we see the pandemic, it's almost sort of brought together a toxic brew, if you will, of, you know, conspiracy theorists who are looking at COVID and doing all of these rallies and trying to create a lot of distrust within populations, and the far right, who are also latching on to those movements and, you know, pushing forward narratives of division that target various communities, whether it's Canadian Muslims, Asian Canadians, Jewish Canadians, and other communities, that we are just seeing this type of division manifesting itself online in particular, and spilling over in these tragic outcomes in real life. Right. And so, you know, the call has been from regulation on online hate as well.
Amir, I just want to focus in on that just quickly. We all talk about online hate, but you're saying that the pandemic in some way has been a hothouse of that, and it's propagated it, heated it up. And I know we don't have the police to make the connections between the online hate that you're seeing and this particular event, but you're saying it doesn't surprise you given what you're seeing online.
That's right. And we don't know, as you say, what motivated the perpetrator in this attack yet. We don't know. We're going to have to hear from police services to understand why they've deemed this to be hate motivated. Was this the accused, you know, was he privy and was he in these types of groups that are permeating online, sharing misinformation, sharing hate? But certainly we're going to come out of this pandemic in a worse situation than going into it when it comes to hate in this country, because indeed we've had this horrible toxic brew, this nexus, as if you will, of people who are anti-establishment, anti-authority, latching on to a racist narratives about who's responsible, who's to blame for what we've been going through for this past year and a bit. And really what it means is that there's a lot of division out there. And sadly and tragically, that division can have these horrendous outcomes.
Yeah, you think these are abstract discussions. And then there's a family of four who are gone. There's a young boy in a hospital without his family. That's the reality. That's the reality here. Amira Al-Ghwabi from the Canadian Anti-Hate Network. Amira, always good to have you on the program. I appreciate it. And obviously our thoughts are with that family and the community. Thank you.
Thank you, Evan.
I want to bring in the Member of Parliament representing actually that the riding where what the police are saying looks like a hate crime took place. Kate Young joins us now. Ms. Young, thank you for joining us. Obviously, you're talking to members of the community in London, Ontario right now. What are they telling you?
Oh, Evan, I am just devastated by this news, and we all are. There isn't anyone in London West or London or Ontario or Canada that isn't devastated. It was a hate-motivated attack against a family and with a vehicle. And it's pure evil. And my heart aches for the Muslim community of London, which is a very close-knit community. And they are just a wonderful community. And we're relatively small, and it's a close-knit group. But this just is so, I can't find the words to describe it. I'm just so shocked.
Has there been any history in London? I know there's a long history of Muslim community there. Has there been any history of Islamophobia, violence, threats? Is this a community that has had to deal with this? Have the police been aware of this?
I think every community across Canada has had to deal with Islamophobia in some way, shape, or form. And this has got to stop. We have got to find a way to make certain that people do not become motivated to do these evil acts. You know, you have a family who's just out for a walk on a Sunday evening. And to think that this was pre-planned and premeditated, as the police are saying, it's just shocking. And I know that London is a safe community. I believe that. I've been in London my entire life, and I love London. And this is not what anyone would want from any community, but it's happened, and it happened here, and it's just beyond belief.
Well, I know the entire city there, the entire country, is on edge because of this kind of thing. And they're thinking about it, and there's going to be long reverberations as the investigation continues. Ms. Young, I really appreciate you taking the time tonight, and I know you're going to be with your community, Kate Young, who's riding this all happened. And thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Evan.
Coming up, we will continue our coverage of the attack. That's what it was. It was a murder, it looks like, according to the police. After the break, we'll get reaction, not only from NDP leader Jagmeet Singh on this, but on another event, a very important debate that happened in Parliament that had to do with Indigenous children and how they've been mistreated in the welfare system and a lawsuit that the federal government is still fighting. All that and lots more. Stay right here with Power Play. Welcome back. A community reeling, a country reeling. London, Ontario police say they believe a Muslim family of five targeted by a 20-year-old driver because they were Muslim. The driver is facing four counts of murder and one count of attempted murder. Three adults and one teenager, all in the same family, are dead, and a child in that family remains in hospital with serious injuries. And as Canada reels from what happened in that city, Parliament is debating another tragic event that's shaken the foundations of this country, the fallout from the discovery of the remains of 215 children in unmarked graves outside of the Kamloops Residential Institution. Again, we don't call them schools because that is not a school, and it was not. Today, the NDP leader, Jagmeet Singh, put forward a motion on another issue, what some Indigenous leaders call the modern-day residential institution system. He wants the government to drop its legal fight against compensation for Indigenous children who were underserved in the child welfare system, up to 50,000 of them. The Human Rights Tribunal has said each of those children deserve $40,000. The government is fighting that. I spoke to the Indigenous Services Minister, Mark Miller. He said that the government is looking for a different form of compensation. But the opposition motion passed 271-0 to drop the fight, except some key cabinet ministers, including Minister Miller, were notably abstaining from the vote. So what does that mean for the government's response to this legal case? We'll talk to Indigenous leader Cindy Blackstock, who led the fight against the government on this file, later in the program. But I want to bring in NDP leader Jagmeet Singh now, and good to have you here. Look, can we start with the events in London, Ontario? Obviously, now that the police have concluded that this is likely a hate crime motivated by the fact that this family was Muslim, intentionally targeted, a mass murder in London. What was your reaction to this? What do you make of this kind of senseless act?
It's unimaginable. I just think about all the families that in this pandemic are going for walks because there's nowhere else to go. You can't go to the community center. You can't go to a gym. So to get out and about in this time when we feel so isolated and stuck at home, so many families go for walks. I see them all the time in neighborhoods, families going for walks. And to think that a family went out for a walk and just didn't make it home, that they were killed just for walking in their community. And the thought that no one should ever, ever be afraid to go for a walk in their community. But right now, Muslim communities are reeling. and wondering what this means. This is senseless. This is heartbreaking. This is horrible. And it is a real example of why we need to fight hate. Hate, extreme right-wing ideology, and white supremacy, Islamophobia, are the real and urgent threat to Canadian safety. And we're seeing example after example, horrible example after example.
Everyone's going to, we hope, everyone expresses the kind of sorrow and horror that you've just expressed. But what does the government do? Like, what kind of concrete action? We don't know if this guy was a lone wolf. We don't know if he's coordinated. We don't know if he's influenced by some social media. Police are still investigating all that. We just know he's motivated, according to police, by hate, that these folks were targeted because they were Muslim. What does the federal government do? Or what does the provincial government do on these things?
Well, we know that in previous examples where we were able to obtain information, the Quebec mosque shooting, the killing of a Muslim man in Toronto, who was downtown Toronto and killed. In those two cases, we've got clear evidence that both of those perpetrators, both of those murderers, were radicalized by visiting extreme right-wing sites, by visiting white supremacist sites, and were radicalized against Muslims wanting to kill and incite hatred and violence against Muslims. So it's clear that there are pages, websites, social media that promotes hate and division, and their goal is to radicalize people, and it works. So we need to target that online hate. We need to target those messages that are spread to incite hatred and the misinformation that is often spread on social media. It's clear that those messages have in the past directly radicalized people that have killed our fellow Canadians. And in this case, we don't know the exact details, but we know that hate is absolutely on the rise, and we know we've got to tackle it.
I don't think this is another, our last conversation about this. This is just the beginning of this story there in London, but it's a continuation of a longer story. But let me, if I can, move over to your opposition motion on reconciliation. You asked the federal government to drop the legal case against Indigenous kids since 2006 who had been in the child welfare system and underserved by it. That vote passed in the House. Okay. I know there's ministers abstain, and I'll talk about that in a second. But does this then lead to any concrete action, Mr. Singh? What message does it send?
Well, a couple of really clear things. One, it is clear that elected people from across this country that represent Canadians across this country came together and voted very clearly and are sending a message directly to the Liberal government, Justin Trudeau, to drop the legal battle against Indigenous kids and survivors. That message is loud and clear. So first off, this should never have been a case. The Liberal government should have never fought these Indigenous kids in court, should have never fought these survivors in court. Now, if that wasn't enough, now Parliament, now the people elected to serve and represent Canadians have stated very clearly that this should not go on. The fact that Justin Trudeau didn't even bother to show up, turned his back on the Indigenous communities, and that the ministers abstained is a betrayal in and of itself. It shows that they don't have the courage to stand behind their decisions. But now they've got to listen to Parliament. Parliament's made this very clear. People have said really clearly they should stop this fight and they should walk the path of reconciliation.
I spoke to Minister Mark Miller and I asked him on CTV's question period on Sunday the same thing. How do you pretend? How does the government say you're supporting Indigenous communities and then taking them to court? At the same time, it just doesn't seem right or consistent. He said that his argument, and I'd love to know what you make of it, is, look, some of these kids were in the child welfare system for a week. Some of them were in there for years. And the Human Rights Tribunal award of $40,000 for each kid doesn't take into account proportionality. He said the federal government will compensate every single kid. He said, we're negotiating that quietly. Meantime, the court case is proceeding. Do you buy his explanation?
I don't. Sadly, that does not pass the muster. Right now, they should just stop fighting this case. They should follow through on the ruling. And if there's an additional case that's brought forward, if there's additional compensation that's requested, or if there's additional compensation that's merited, that's a separate case, and we can figure out the path forward for that. But there is no excuse at all to to contravene or to not even follow through on multiple and multiple Canadian Human Rights Tribunal rulings. Right. This federal government, this Liberal government, and Justin Trudeau have literally ignored multiple rulings. There's no excuse for that.
And Parliament agrees 271-0. But as you say, Carolyn Bennett and Minister Mark Miller, the two ministers in charge of that file, abstained. Jagmeet Singh, I appreciate you joining us. Thank you.
Thank you.
By the way, we'll pick up that discussion with Cindy Blackstock in the press gallery and the political fallout of that. But some other news you need to know right now. Jason Kenney's Sky Palace mea culpa.
I want sincerely to apologize to my colleagues and to Albertans for letting you down.
Premier Jason Kenney, there he was, and as some of his key ministers apologized following intense criticism by both his own cabinet and the opposition after being photographed at a dinner in what's known as the Sky Palace, that penthouse suite that essentially ran out a former Conservative premier there that broke Alberta's public health measures. Finally, he's apologized. At first, he tried to defend it. Also, Air Canada's top executives will now return the hefty bonuses they received during the pandemic amidst growing backlash. The airline paid out $10 million in bonuses as well as stock options during the bailout package negotiations with Ottawa. Air Canada says the CEO along with the vice presidents are, quote, voluntarily returning their payments. Well, the recently retired former president CEO will donate his bonus to the Air Canada Foundation. I guess the outrage encouraged the volunteerism. Ottawa will allow cross-border travel for future NHL playoff games. There's an exemption now allowing for the Stanley Cup playoffs to be played in Canada and the United States. Incoming players and club personnel from the U.S. to Canada will be subject to daily testing, will have to remain in the bubble, but they won't have to quarantine for the usual 14 days like you have to. Canadian Immigration Minister Marco Mendicino says the federal government feels this is a plan they could move forward with.
We made it an absolute precondition that before taking this decision that we would have to have the prior written approval of healthcare officials at every level of government, including the provinces and municipalities. And I want to thank the provinces of Ontario, Quebec, Manitoba, and Alberta, along with all the cities, all of whom signed off on this. Second, the NHL put forward a very responsible and rigorous protocol for the playoffs that is anchored in ongoing quarantining, that is modified for work, as well as bubbling on both sides of the border, as well as ongoing pre-arrival and post-arrival daily testing.
Okay, well, if you cross the border and you've got two shots, you still got to pay $3,000 in the quarantine hotel and have a quarantine plan. But I guess you don't plan the NHL. Coming up, Canada reels from the horrific attack in London, Ontario. How does Canada confront Islamophobia? And how do our leaders prevent other attacks? The press gallery is going to take that up next. Stay with us. Welcome back to the program. It's hard to say this. Four members of a single family are now dead, and a 9-year-old boy is in hospital with serious injuries after a targeted attack against them in London, Ontario. The police say the victims were targeted simply because they're Muslim. This is not the first anti-Muslim attack in Canada. Just over 4 years ago, a gunman killed 6 and injured 19 worshippers at a Quebec City mosque. How does Canada tackle Islamophobia? How is that community feeling? How will this investigation proceed? I'm going to bring in the press panel to talk about this. The press gallery, Tana McCharles, parliamentary reporter with the Toronto Star, Carl Dockstader, co-host of One Dish, One Mic, executive director of the Niagara Regional Native Centre. And our special guest is Mubin Sheikh, of course, a former CSIS and RCMP undercover agent and now professor of public safety at Seneca College. Good to see all of you, not on a day like this. These are terrible days, Mubin. Obviously, all of us are reeling from this attack, but when you see from the world you inhabit, the security world, the world of Islamophobia, the world of hate that you study and fight against, Mubin, what was your reaction to what this means and what this says?
Well, unfortunately, we've kind of been primed and conditioned to understand when we hear the news of a vehicle attack against pedestrians, civilians, This was a tactic that ISIS employed very well in different countries all over the world, killing dozens of people. And now we're seeing the exact same thing here in Canada, but conducted by a far-right attacker. You'll remember also the incel attacker in Toronto also used a rental van. So this seems to be an easy weapon of choice for people who want to commit a quick attack.
Yeah, it is. We've seen it. Remember, I think we saw it also in Nice when someone used that truck in France as well. Tonda, your reaction to this. Parliament has been seized with Islamophobia. It goes back to 2017, where Liberal MP Iqra Khalid sponsored that non-binding motion to condemn Islamophobia. It passed back then, 201 to 91, but it was divisive.
It was controversial.
How does this play out politically?
Yeah, it was very controversial, wasn't it? I mean, just remember that a lot of people thought that this was going too far, or it wasn't addressing not that it wasn't addressing a real problem, but it was the wrong way to address a problem. But the fact of the matter is, and I think Mubin will attest to this, that the numbers and the data show that the rise in hate crimes against Blacks, against Muslims in Canada continues to grow, and against Jews, by the way. We had this huge jump in hate crimes in 2017, a 47% increase, and it has stayed that high and continued to increase ever since. So all the motions passed in the House of Commons have done little. All the funding that's gone to protect mosques and to protect faith groups in their places of worship have done nothing to stem the tide of hate crimes.
Yeah, we had someone, Carl Dockshade from the Anti-Hate Network, on, just saying that in some ways the pandemic has been a hothouse of hate online, and that it's springing forth. Carl, I wonder, it's not just the Muslim community, but as Tonda rightly pointed out, lots of visible minority communities are feeling targeted. What's your sense of this?
I think it doesn't happen in a vacuum. I think that people don't just pop out of the woodwork with extreme hate and racist views. And I think that's why anti-racism and why anti-hate work on the community level is so important. And it's really important for visible leadership before these types of things happen to embrace the language of anti-racism. And I wonder if we would have done those types of things since last summer, if maybe we could have drawn out some of these extreme actions.
Carl, let me quickly stay with you. Are you seeing this kind of, I mean, and we'll talk about this in our next panel. You saw what happened with the statue of Egerton Ryerson, all the coverage of the remains of the 215 children found at the Institute in Kamloops, the calls, of course, for reconciliation. Is your community feeling online pushback, even in the wake of those tragic events?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot less in the last week, though. And what I can say about everything that's happened, including the statue getting pulled down last night, is if the government doesn't find a suitable way to address these concerns through policy, through leadership, through actions, then people like members of my community are going to get frustrated, and there can possibly be more.
Yeah, Mubin, can you pull back the curtain a bit about how police investigate this? So. You know this from the inside. They arrest this guy. They've charged him. Now they're saying that this could be motivated. It could be a hate crime. What would they be looking for right now? And what might they be looking for other threats, like the nexus of threats?
Yeah, so, one of the first things we should keep in mind with investigations like this, I mean, a murder and attempted murder investigation is, frankly, easier to prove in court. It's easier, quote unquote, than a terrorism investigation per se. So if you look at the Edmonton ISIS attack, the guy had an ISIS flag in the truck cabin with him, but they didn't charge him with terrorism. They didn't mention terrorism because murder and attempted murder are more severe offenses anyway. So on the investigative side, it's a pretty straightforward investigation. He used a vehicle. He killed people. I am curious to know where they got this information that it was hate motivated and how they came up with that right away. I'm sure that they've looked at looked at his own statements. Maybe he made some statements, but it hasn't been publicly reported, or he had a device on him, which maybe they saw something. I'm leaning towards the testimony part, or some kind of admission or verbal statement that he made. But keep in mind, the guy kept driving. He kept going southbound and ended up at the mall nearby. and that's where they ended up arresting him. They said that he was wearing what looked like a vest of some kind. They don't know if it was armored or not. It could have been a padded vest. We don't know. But again, that might indicate that this guy, maybe he had some other plans. So these are things that are going to come out in the next few days as we start to get a little bit more information. But this is exactly what the police are going to do. They're going to try to find a digital footprint. So far, nothing's really coming up. I've seen some people spit out some social media accounts, but nothing's really panning out in that sense.
Tanya, this is happening at a time, a very divisive political time. I mean, we're a year from the George Floyd and the Black Lives Matter discussion and debates that have gone across the world. We're talking, and we will in the next break, talk about reconciliation and the failure to do things there. Now we've got the Islamophobia debate. You mentioned the rise of anti-Semitism. There's a lot of, well, how is this impacting this kind of notion of the social cohesion here? Because this will have a major political fallout.
Yeah, and I think it does undermine a sense of unity in the country. And that's why you've heard so many Muslim leaders, community spokespeople in the last hour even, come out and call for all leaders of all parties at all government levels to support, issue statements condemning the violence, condemning the motivation behind the violence, and making very clear statements this is not Canada. I frankly wonder, does that make a difference anymore to hear that stuff to community members? Because we hear it all the time. You know, just before Christmas, you know, there was a caretaker at a Toronto mosque who was slain. It's you wonder if what is being achieved by that. But look, I think that one thing that does go a long way to dealing with this is seeing justice be done. And what Mubin just said about, you know, prosecuting murder when it's murder and not seeking to, you know, dress it up at the outset with harder to prove charges, that goes a ways to getting justice. And then to bring in motivations and whatnot at a sentencing level, you know, communities need to see justice done. They need to see charges laid, and they need to see things pursued to their end in court.
That is the road to justice. Okay, Mubin Sheikh, I always appreciate having you on. Carl and Tonda are going to stick around because I do want to move into this other critical issue. Not only was the statue of Egerton Ryerson torn down in Toronto, then you've got the House passing an NDP motion 271-0 for the government to stop its court action against compensating Indigenous children. But two cabinet ministers abstained and the prime minister wasn't there. Cindy Blackstock, who spent years fighting for those children, joins us as a special guest. Stay with us. Welcome back. We just got a little breaking news here. The Prime Minister has just tweeted out a statement about the attack in London that targeted members of a family, killing four, injuring a fifth. I'm horrified by the news from London, Ontario, to the loved ones of those who are terrorized by yesterday's act of hatred. We are here for you. We are also here for the child who remains in hospital. Our hearts go out to you, and you will be in our thoughts as you recover. Aaron O'Toole, the leader of the Conservative Party of Canada, has also just put out a message. Reports that the killing of a family in London, Ontario, were hate motivated because of their Muslim faith is horrific and heartbreaking. Mr. O'Toole writes, to the family and friends of the victim, I want to express my deepest condolences. I'm just reading from his Twitter. This just came out seconds ago. During this unimaginably difficult time, this type of vile and extreme hatred must be condemned. An Islamophobic act of terror like this has no place in Canada. We stand with the Muslim community and reaffirm our commitment to build a country that is free from hatred, where Canadians of all faiths can live without fear of violence and persecution. Interesting. I'm calling it again an act of terror. So all leaders, we had Jagmeet Singh on, so Mr. O'Toole, Mr. Trudeau, now tweeting out about that. Meantime, the House of Commons passed an NDP motion on reconciliation. 271-0, Mr. Singh's Opposition Day motion called for the federal government to drop their court action concerning medical compensation for non-status First Nation kids and access to recordings dealing with the abuse at the St. Anne Residential School. Kids were literally put in electric chairs there. The motion also called for the Trudeau government to implement the calls to action for the Truth and Reconciliation Commission and a progress report within 10 days. But the Prime Minister did not show up, and two of the key ministers, Minister Miller and Minister Bennett, abstained. What does that tell us? The press gallery's back with Tonda McCharles from the Toronto Star, Carl Dockstader, co-host of One Dish, One Mic, and the executive director of the Niagara Regional Native Centre, and Cindy Blackstock is our special guest, executive director of First Nations Child and Family Caring Society. She's been really driving this fight, and welcome back, everyone. Cindy Blackstock, what did you make of the vote today? And what did you make of the fact that Mr. Trudeau wasn't there and the two key ministers abstained?
You know, what I saw was Canadians all over social media, some of whom have never written to their MP before, writing to their MP and saying they want this injustice to stop. They have tired with the nonsense of taxpayer money going to litigating against residential school survivors, litigating against justice for First Nations kids, and not implementing the TRC's calls to action. So that was great. But it was really disappointing to see the cabinet not step up. I mean, where are they? On this day, particularly, where we see this travesty for the Muslim community about the violence of systemic discrimination, this federal government needs to make sure that they're not role modeling systemic discrimination by not addressing its own accountability and stopping the injustices that are within their power to do so.
Carl, what did you make of the vote today and the abstaining?
It just feels like more of the same. I mean, I've been saying through this that we can't go back to normal. Like in our community, the flags are going to go back up after having been down for 215 hours. But what I'm saying to everyone is the flags are going to go back up, but life can't just go back to the way that it was before everything. And so seeing this vote today, I mean, it was great, but seeing the Prime Minister and the two key ministers abstain, what kind of a message is that sending?
Yeah. Tonda, what message does it send, and what will this mean? Like, will this lead to the federal government dropping this case?
No, is the short answer to the last part of your question. I don't think, anyway, based on everything that they've been saying for the past week, it's hard to believe that the government is sticking to that position, but they feel they have a legal principle to argue, whatever the case may be. And whatever the Prime Minister's reasons for not showing up for that vote today, and whatever the Minister's reasons for abstaining from it, it's not a good look. It's not a good look for the government. It's not a good look for Canada, especially at a time when Canadians, as Cindy Blackstock just said, are demanding movement, action, change.
Mm. Cindy, I just got a couple seconds. Where do you go from here?
We go to court, and we'll keep fighting and working with Canadians to stop these injustices and implement these TRC's calls to action. Canadians are way out in front of the government on this one, and we need to make sure that the government acts in honour of them and of all the First Nations, Métis and Inuit people across this country. We can do it together.
You go back to court, imagine. Okay, so quite a day today. Cindy Blackstock, I always appreciate, we all appreciate you joining us. Carl and Tonda, always a pleasure to have you there. That is your Power Play Day in politics. It's a difficult day for this country as we see a family targeted because of hate. We'll have lots more right here on CTV News Channel about that. Thank you for watching. Hug your loved ones. Difficult days in this country. We'll see you again in 23 short hours.